Welcome back, Florida Live, 6 after the hour. I'm Dan Maduri, broadcasting across the I-4 corridor, helping you solve the world's problems 3 hours at a time. And the shocking death of comedian and actor Robin Williams is rekindling talk about an often misunderstood human tragedy, suicide. The statistics are chilling. Someone commits suicide in this country every 13 minutes, all day, every day. Here to help us understand suicide, the signs, and how someone as beloved as Robin Williams would even think about ending his own life is Bay Area psychologist Dr. Wendy Rice. Dr. Rice, how are you?
I'm good. I'm sad, but I'm good. How are you?
Same. Thank you for taking the time. So let's talk about Robin Williams first. We know he had a long-running drug and alcohol addiction because he talked openly about it in his comedy and acting. Before we get into the mental illness, is a chemical dependency enough to cause someone to commit suicide?
Okay. A little bit we need to look at the chemical dependency a little bit separate from the mood disorder. And it's not my understanding that he has been actively using of late. Mm-hmm. My understanding from what I've heard on the news has been that he checked himself back into rehab kind of for preventative and, you know, to just keep himself on the straight and narrow. So drug and alcoholism certainly can affect your moods and drive you to a really bad place and make you want to kill yourself. Bipolar disorder, manic, you know, depressive illness, can also make a person feel so awful that they feel hopeless and want to kill themselves. The connection is that what sometimes happens is that people with a significant mood disorder, especially when they have such highs and such lows, don't want to take prescription medication because it dulls the highs. It dulls the lows and it dulls the highs, and they don't like that. So they self-medicate using alcohol or cocaine or drugs, which is, you know, not as regulated as well. And so the depression, the highs and the lows aren't controlled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that kind of making sense?
It does. It makes a whole lot of sense. Now, when it comes to Robin Williams, he was only 63 years old and he died from self-inflicted asphyxiation at his home. So I guess the next question is, he had just gotten out of treatment to keep him off substances. How likely is it that he decided one day to kill himself, or was this a long process of consideration with somebody that has mental illness?
Some people are impulsive, and there certainly are people who could kill themselves impulsively, but that's not, you know, men are more likely to commit suicide, women are more likely to attempt suicide because men tend to take a more lethal route. My guess is that he has suffered for, well, my understanding is that he has suffered for a very, very long time. And the odds are that suicide is something that has crossed his mind over the years. Again, I'm speculating, I don't know, but typically a person doesn't just wake up one morning and say, oh, today's a good day to kill myself. Typically they've been feeling very bad for quite some time, and maybe on and off over many, many, many years, and then they are just like, this is enough. I'm feeling horrible, my life is never going to get better, you know, because depression tells you all sorts of horrible lies, you know, and it makes things seem so bad.
Yeah. Why is it that men tend to be more lethal than women?
They choose more lethal methods than women. So a man will hang himself, a man will shoot himself in the head with a gun, and a woman will take pills, which could mess up. A woman will cut her wrists, which could mess up. It's the difference between men and women.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Dr. Wendy Rice. This is Florida Live. I'm Dan Maduri. So Robin Williams' publicist said that he was suffering from, and I quote, a severe depression of late. Let's talk about mental health. I have heard that 9 out of every 10 people who thinks about suicide has some sort of kind of mental illness. How could Robin Williams not have been diagnosed or treated to keep his emotions level?
Again, I don't know the facts here. I can't imagine that he wasn't. But, you know, sometimes we do the very best we can, and it's still really hard. We don't have a surefire way to alleviate depression. And manic depression, you know, he had such incredible highs. And that comes with such incredible lows that even though he probably, and again, I'm speculating, was diagnosed and probably had some pretty good treatment, it's not always enough. And then also, you know, he had a whole bunch of movie projects that he was working on now. It's hard to find the time to also go to treatment and be true to it. So I'm wondering whether he took time out to go back to rehab to get sort of bolstered and to get some treatment there.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be compliant with medication and with therapy sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So you think that the workload might have been just too much for him to endure it and stay loyal to himself when it came to going to rehab?
Self-care is really hard when you have five movies that you're making at one time. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, I don't know his state of mind, but when you're feeling overwhelmed, you know, even if you have good care.
Yeah.
Now, yeah.
I wanted to ask you this. Williams actually addressed suicide in his 2009 film, World's Greatest Dad. And one of his lines was, and I'm quoting this, "If you're that depressed, reach out to somebody. And remember, suicide is a permanent solution to temporary problems. What does it show you that he would say something like that in a film, obviously close to home, and then still end up killing himself anyways?
It says the power of depression. Depression is so powerful that it impairs your judgment. It impairs your impulse control. It just messes with your brain, something fierce. You know, I was pretty depressed after I'd finished graduate school, and I'm a fairly competent and a fairly confident person, and I believed that I couldn't do anything. Like, I had a doctoral degree and a New York State license to practice, you know, psychology in New York. And I was feeling, you know, I was feeling guilty about every move that I made. And I was, you know, and that's what happens when you have depression. It wrecks your reality testing, your grasp on reality.
Yeah.
So the fact that he made that statement, probably some part of his brain knew that, but your feelings and your thoughts can just destroy that hold on reality.
What was that like for you, somebody who's medically trained in mental health, to go through such a deep depression yourself? I mean, how did you react to it? Was it more of a doctor's reaction that you have with patients, or was it more personal? How did you deal with that?
It's definitely personal, because it's very hard to see it coming. And it's a little insidious. Like, it creeps up on you, and all of a sudden, for me at least, and for many patients, you go from being this okay, capable person to feeling like you can't do anything. And I didn't see, you know, you feel like it's real. You don't, you need often somebody to point out to you. Your thinking is getting kind of messed up. It's not meshing with reality, which is that you're accomplished, you've done all of these things, you take care of these people, you have a really good job, you have loved ones, you have a social life. Look at all of this. That does not match with the voice in your head that's saying that you can't do anything and that life is hopeless and that you're worthless.
Yeah.
So I needed help to see it. And, you know, and once somebody points out, thank goodness I am trained at this point. But I still sometimes need somebody to say, Wendy, do you hear what you're sounding like?
Mm-hmm.
This is not you. And because, you know, I know what you need to do. You need to get exercise. You need to sleep. You need to eat healthy. You need to push yourself to be social and be out there and spend time with people. You know, there's so many things we know are helpful to combat depression and anxiety at this point that I have a better tool bag than I had 20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, we hear that one sign of someone who is entertaining suicide is that they talk about it, but aren't the ones who are really serious likely to keep it to themselves so they don't risk getting caught or being stopped?
You know, not necessarily. People, you have to take people seriously who do talk about it, because those people act on it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, some people are secretive about it, but they often leave clues, and in hindsight, not all the time, but in hindsight, we can often piece together clues, like giving away prized possessions,
mm-hmm.
like stopping talking about the future, being, you know, short-sighted about things. So there are some subtle clues and some more obvious clues. But, of course, some people won't share with anybody that mm-hmm. that's their plan.
Very good. Dr. Wendy Rice, thank you very much for taking the time and joining us here on Florida
Life. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Very interesting. Talking about Robin Williams, talking about how basically if removed from his treatment, removed from the rehab facility, removed from his loved ones, as he had about four or five movies going at one time, might have aided him in his decision to take his own life. How he basically was working so hard because he was having money problems that he neglected his health. Next thing you know, this is the result.